You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, Fairfield, Iowa.
This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with my co-host, Alan Cobb, and our guest today is Jim Meyer. I know him as Jim Meyer. Of course, his art name is James Meyer on his artwork. But I'm going to have to call you Jim. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, do. Please call me Jim, because James I don't answer to.
Yeah. All right. You have a piece, an installation that we've put up in Icon for 3 weeks, and it was up at the Art Walk. I wanted people to see what you were doing, and you're sort of launching yourself back into developing your career as an artist, because you've been doing other things. You've been continuing to, compile hours and hours of video footage, and now you're compiling them into artworks. But your past is that of a very sophisticated, highly educated artist. You have a master's of fine arts degree. I don't remember which school.
My MFA is from Columbia College in Chicago. And while I was getting my MFA, I was hired at the Illinois Institute of Art as an instructor, and quickly was promoted out of the classroom and became director of technology for two campuses. And that kind of changed things. As most of us know, getting a teaching job in the arts is a little difficult, and I thought I would take this director of technology position and run with it. The money was really good, and I learned a lot doing the job, but it unfortunately got me out of the classroom, and I wasn't really a working artist as much as I would have liked to have been at that point.
Well, that's a pretty typical story for artists, is life gets in the way sometimes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you were really quite immersed in the contemporary fine art world, but you also have this other side. How did you get involved with the National Guard and end up before deployments
in the Middle
East?
It's the Air National Guard.
Okay.
Air National Guard is opposed to the National Guard. National Guard is Army. Air National Guard is part of the Air Force. My dad was in the Air Force in between Korea and Vietnam, and have always been enamored with the military. Just kind of thought
Your
I
dad
would somehow.
Or you've always been
I always
with.
Was,
okay.
Yeah. And I always just kind of thought I would get into the military somehow. And I've always liked airplanes and flying. And so I've always had this art thing and this other side to me. I also knew that I never would have made it active duty because of attitudes and lifestyles, that sort of thing. And so I kind of just pushed aside the military thing. And then I found out about the Air National Guard. And I thought, oh, I can get into the military part-time. The benefits are pretty amazing on some level. And it's kind of a fun gig. So for 6 years, I was in the Air National Guard out in California. And I was what's called a crew chief on F-4s, on Phantoms. Basically doing maintenance, launching, and recovering the aircraft. And I got out, moved back to Chicago, and had about a 10-year break from the military while I got my master's degree and started teaching, and kind of followed that path for about 12 years. Ended up here in Fairfield, and kind of just stayed in Fairfield. Was laid off from my position at MUM. I originally came here to teach digital media, web design, graphic design, and they did away with my department that I was teaching in. And I just thought, might as well stay here for a little bit. And
here
it is 12 years later. And I've tried to escape numerous times. And lately, the farthest I get is Afghanistan for about 60 days. Which makes for
so
an
you
interesting
weren't expecting
life.
Us to go to two wars.
No, it's really interesting. My second drill weekend was when the Iraqi conflict, the Iraqi war, kicked off, and I was thinking, "Oh my God, what did I get myself into?" So it's been an interesting ride, It's been a little rough on many different levels, both here in Fairfield and in the guard unit that I'm in.
But two completely different worlds, huh?
Two completely different worlds. And here, the military world is not understood in Fairfield, really. And a lot of people have, a lot of doubts about our government and where the money's going and that sort of thing. So I'm having to defend myself both here in Fairfield and in the guard. My call sign in the guard is Fruits and Nuts. And I'll show up to work with my organic food. I'll get on the airplane and, you know, I've got all this organic food that I'm eating as we're flying along in this military airplane. So it makes for a very interesting life.
It sounds like you have a unique role in global and integration.
In the world.
In the world,
you're
yes.
You're a catalyst. Yes. And you can't escape your destiny.
No. And my goal is to learn how to balance both worlds. And I think we've talked about that. And it makes for a very interesting life to walk in both worlds.
Yeah. So your degree is in photography?
My MFA is in photography, traditional photography. I took a lot of digital media. I received my degree in 2000. It took a few years my coursework I think I finished in 99, maybe 98, and took a couple years to write my thesis. But I took a lot of courses in filmmaking and digital media. It was kind of the beginning of the digital era.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, then the first digital camera I got with great reluctance in a way was in 1999. And it was just awful. It was so horrible. I said, okay, this confirms it. I'm staying with film. And I've been shooting all my life. I started out with my dad's Leica when I was kid, and we had a dark room in the house and stuff. And then somewhere around 2005, I guess, I got a Nikon 5100, which was a little sort of, it looked like an SLR, but it wasn't, with a considerable amount of zoom, and it was 5 megapixels, which was enough to be useful. And it didn't have horrendous shutter lag and stuff like that. And I pretty much plumbed the depths of that camera and realized that, you know, I kept going back to my Nikon F suitcase full of stuff. And I had an F2SB, which was nice. Every now and then I put a new battery in it to see if it still works. But I have absolutely no interest in film anymore. It's just gone from my life and I don't miss it.
I still do have an interest in film. Most of my photography was done with a 4x5 camera.
Oh, yeah. I do have an interest in that kind of film.
Large negative, and I just really love how that silver image looks.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's an equivalent yet.
I think you're right. Although Red is getting close, and Hasselblad are doing
pretty well. There's people getting there, but it's not there yet.
Yeah.
And digital backs for 2.25s and 4x5s are still $40,000, $20,000 maybe to get an entry level. Yeah. So it's still very expensive.
Have you seen the 4x5 adapter for DSLR?
No.
It's an amazing thing. It's it's good in the studio or for a still life where there's no wind. But basically, it's a grid system, and you take a picture and you move the camera, and you take a picture and the camera slides through all the necessary positions,
and then you stitch,
and you get this 250 megapixel image together, and it's pretty good, but I don't think it's as good as a leaf back or something that's only 50 megapixels.
And that's what I'm familiar with, is the leaf.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, and they're still outrageously expensive.
And they're slow, too.
Very slow still. Yeah. So for now, I'm going to stick with 4x5.
Yeah.
Are you doing any of that kind of work?
A little bit.
Do you have a Cinar or something?
I have a Leica Technica. Or Linhof. Linhof. Yeah. Technica,
yeah.
Which is a field camera that folds up nicely. Mm-hmm. And I bought it when I was an undergraduate student. A professor was wanting to sell it to a student. And, you know, he gave me a great deal. And I could sell it easily for 10 times what I paid for it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's tempting. I go to eBay and look at the price, but it's one of those things that I'd never be able to replace.
Yeah. I sold a Zeiss Contourex with a planar 1.4 lens on it that I got in college. Nice. This kid came up to me and said, I need $150 really fast. And I said, well, you know, nobody around here has $150 in their pocket. This was in central Vermont. He said, well, I've got to get it. And I want to sell my camera. And I looked at his camera, and it was a Zeiss Icon Contourex in this bulletproof leather case. It was like it was made out of armor or something. And this huge honking 1.4 55 millimeter normal lens on it. And I took one look through the viewfinder
and
said, I will find $150. And I had my motorcycle right next to me, and I hopped on and I went from dorm to dorm and borrowed $10
from 15
people.
And
I came back and gave it to him. Turns out the guy's name was David Malden. His father is Malden, the cartoonist from The New Yorker, who did World War II in cartoons. Mm-hmm. And his father found out he'd sold the camera. He had a collection of cameras, apparently, and was furious. Next year, when I got back to campus, David said, my dad wants his camera back. And I said, well, I'm sorry. I bought it from you, and you know it wasn't stolen property. And I'll sell it back to him at a profit, but I'm not going to sell it to anybody for $150. And he said, well, you know, my dad really wants that particular camera. And I thought it had changed my whole approach to photography, just looking through that lens.
It's amazing.
And I said, I'll trade it. I can't afford to buy lenses for it, so I'll trade it for a Nikon F with three lenses. And it would be worth more than that, but I would accept that in trade. So he called his dad and asked him. His father exploded on the phone and wouldn't talk to him for 2 weeks because this college student was, you know, raking him over the coals. Yeah. So I lived with that camera for a long time, and I finally sold it when I was on international staff at Marashi and got a Nikon because I still couldn't afford to buy a lens cap for the thing.
No, it's outrageous.
But the idea that you see the world through the glass, and the glass just changes everything.
It does, and it's upside down and backwards.
Yeah.
And for me, it really slowed down the way I approach picture taking.
Mm-hmm.
To set up for a shot, quickest was maybe, you know, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Typically more like 30 to 45 minutes to make one shot by the time I level everything and really look at what am I doing here.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of translates into my video also, that I'm fairly slow about how I capture images.
Well, let me just say for our listening audience, if they just turned us on in their car, in your car out there, we're interviewing Jim Meyer, Alan Cobb, and I, Bill Teeple, are interviewing Jim Meyer, and we're on KRUU FM 100.1 on your dial, and this is Icon Art Radio. Let's pull it back a little bit to because I'd love to do three shows with you, but you've got to run off. So
I can come back tomorrow. Today's just a bad day.
I'm sorry about that. We'll have to just schedule differently next time. Okay. In any case, we got you here. So while we've got you here, I'd like you to say a few words about how the art that you started doing in on your tours of duty came about.
I've always been interested in video. Just have always been interested in filmmaking and the process of making film and now video. And it's always kind of been out of my reach. I wasn't that into it that I ran out and bought cameras and dove into it. But I've paid attention to the technologies over the years. And one trip, prior to this past trip that I went to Afghanistan, I ran into Richard Beamer about 2 weeks before leaving. And we were talking about video. And I told him, oh, I've got my still camera that does little QuickTime video, and I've been using that. And he's like, oh, Jim, you need to buy an HD camera. And what did I do? I went home, and I got online, and I bought an HD camera with a super wide-angle lens. and have been making video seriously since then. No more little QuickTime 240 by 160 HD. And it's been an interesting process. So when I get deployed or when I'm traveling with the military, I tend to document what we're doing, where I'm going, and what my life is like in this different environment. And sometimes it's hotel rooms. I spend a lot of time in hotel rooms traveling, not just to and from Afghanistan, but on trips with the military stateside as well. And it's this world that I think a lot of people are aware of, people in the Guard or in the Air National Guard these days, because of all the wars and conflicts going on, there's a lot of people getting activated. And so everybody, I think, knows somebody that's involved in this, but nobody really knows what it looks like and what it's like, what it feels like to be either deployed or to be involved with the Guard or the Air National Guard. And so one of the things I'd like to do with my art is share that. My photography's been documentary and autobiographical, and I continue to do that with my video. It's documenting my life and those around me, and it's very much autobiographical in nature. And so it was a fairly natural and easy transition for me to go from film to, or from traditional photography to video.
Now, what you have at Icon right now is a 5-screen installation. Now, you've done installation art in the past.
I have done installations in the past involving sound and still images and text and some video, little snippets of video. But this piece I've kind of thought about doing for a while. And the reason it's 5 and I wanted it to be in the round and as many screens as I possibly could get together. Kind of, I was really kind of limited to budget, but I think more than 5 might be too much. I wanted to kind of recreate the environment in the cockpit of the C-130 aircraft. It's a confined kind of aircraft, and it's noisy, and it's very VADA aggravating, to use a term that people around here are familiar with. And so that's why I did what I did with that installation. It's 5 separate video channels, 5 separate audio tracks, and there is one dominant audio and video track, and the rest are a little bit quieter, more subdued.
I had an interesting experience because I've been turning it on and off for you every day.
Thank you very much.
So what I did was I listened to one alone. And it's a completely different thing. It was all quiet. Kind of, I mean, there was the noise, but it was just like one track. But when you have all 5, it is this sort of like, it's an onslaught of sort of like, sort of somewhat aggravating, irritating, sort of like activity going on. So I think you gave me the feeling of what it must be kind of like to have like all of that going on. I assume that all of that was to amplify what's going on inside of you, the internal sort of experiences you're having doing this, because there's sort of an anger. You could get shot down at any moment, so there's a sort of anxiety hanging over you. It's not just like taking a trip across in an airplane across the country to visit grandma. It's like you're in the middle of a war zone.
Right, exactly.
So I think, I thought you built a very interesting minimalist kind of work of art, and at the same time told a story, and it also created a state of mind. I'm very pleased with that piece.
I think it turned out well, too. I want to get back to something you just brought up about when you listened and watched one track, one channel. Every channel, every video channel has a different emotional level to it also. If you look at the one that is the low level flying through the mountains, everybody's kind of excited because we're doing what's called 60 and two turns, where we're banking the aircraft 60 degrees and pulling a couple of G's as we do it. And we're basically terrain following out of this valley. And everybody's giddy as can be because it's a blast to do that. We live for moments like that. So everybody's excited and happy. And then there's the airdrop. And the airdrop is where you're looking out the back of the aircraft with the ramp and door open. And we're delivering ammunition and food to some Army troops that are on the ground that were kind of pinned down and they were running short on supplies. And if we did not get those supplies to them, who knows what would have happened to them. So there's some anxiety there that we're under lots of pressures. It's those kind of missions where we could take small arms fire, but we're not so concerned with that as much as we are getting that load out of the airplane and into the place, making sure it lands where it's supposed to land. So every piece does have a little different emotional tenor to it.
But, you know, I think some people think it's very, very simple, but I think probably people that have come to hear the story of Iraq, of Afghanistan, as opposed to having a lot of experience at looking at the poetic, concentrated dose that you get in a work of art. And that's what mm-hmm. I get out of that piece. So if you spend a little time with it, it's very rewarding, as any work of art is. You spend some time with it.
How much longer will this installation be?
Okay, so this radio show is being recorded in May of 2012, if you're listening to a repeat in the future. So this show will be at Icon Gallery and the Square in Fairfield until May 24th, which is this coming Thursday. So I'd say take the opportunity to come down and experience Jim's piece.
Definitely. And the gallery is open?
Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4. There you go.
Great. So we have tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow and then
Tuesday
a couple of days
and
next week. So yeah. I was trying to get Jim down here on the radio so that we could talk about it before it went away, and we just made it. So
hopefully.
Don't procrastinate. Come on down and enjoy this piece.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I think it's interesting in a kind of strange parallel to some of the work that I do with sound because of the timbre of it. Because most of the sound in all of the five pieces is ambience. It's not music, and it's not speech, and it's not sound effects. It's not, you know, the sound of a thing that you recognize. It's just an environment. And those sound environments are rich and complex and have, you know, a full spectrum of effects on us. But we normally tune them out and think about the foreground, which is, you know, the instrument panel or what you're seeing out of the cockpit window or something. To me, this is a sound installation with video.
and that's kind of how I look at it too, uh-huh. is that in some ways the sound is the more important thing than the video mm-hmm. on some level. Mm-hmm. The video, I think, is more of a distractor, mm-hmm. is how I see it.
Yeah.
And the meat and potatoes is in the sound, is in the yeah. audio track, which is difficult to listen to.
Mm-hmm. But you can also hear it all through the gallery.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is great. I didn't mind that.
Yeah, well, that's one of the difficulties.
When you're not
sound.
In there, that you're actually, it becomes more, the sound value becomes, you realize yeah. how much of it is sound.
Yeah.
I mean, the video just is an example of how the video just captures people.
Yeah.
You know, if there's video, that's the tension is all living there. Yeah. You don't, the sound is a side issue.
And I was thinking about that. My thinking was the video is the hook to get people in. And then the sound is really what mm-hmm. it's about on some level. Yeah. That's where the emotion is. That's where the feeling is
well, and being surrounded by it, you know, we hear around corners. We don't see around corners.
Correct.
So you hear all five, even though you can only look at one or maybe two or slightly three at a time. But you're immersed in sound, and you don't get immersed in visual. It's a different thing.
No,
visual
is
always in front.
Yeah, you can only focus on one screen really at a time. Yeah. And one of my goals was to have people looking at one screen and then getting distracted and having mm-hmm. to change, look at another yeah. screen. Something yeah. is happening over here, so they divert their attention mm-hmm. and maybe work their way around, maybe not. It, yeah. you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But you mentioned in the talk you gave that's kind of the experience you're having in real time in the airplane, a kind of like the attention is on several things at once.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The joke is, with a lot of flyers, is anytime there's a shiny object, everybody's attention goes to that shiny object. Mm-hmm. It might be a pertinent object. Usually it's not. It's usually a distractor. Mm-hmm. And so one of my goals, and most of us as flyers, is to figure out, is this shiny object worth putting my attention on, or do I stay focused?
Yeah. So it works like chaff with radar.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
We're susceptible to our own chaff.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
That's interesting.
Yeah. What do we pay attention to and what don't we pay attention
yeah.
to?
Yeah. Well, and of course, what we end up seeing is only a fabrication in the mind's eye anyway. The senses
yes.
are missing a lot of stuff and the brain is helpfully filtering out lots of stuff that we mm-hmm. might actually prefer to have known about.
Exactly, yes.
And there's no
yes.
telling. The ultimate reality is that we live in a soup of quantum physics that isn't anything like what we see on the screen inside. Not even.
No, and I don't even want to start that discussion.
Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time,
yeah,
we're not
going to
go there. Another show. In any case, it's been a pleasure to talk to you a little bit about what you're doing, and
I'm glad
nice to talk to you again a little bit about what you've got planned for the future. And
I do have some plans for the future.
Well, I know you have to get back to work today, so we'll invite you back another day soon.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.